You're listening to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 188, for the week of September 12th, 2012.
Everybody, this is the Experience Points Podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And my name is George Albor.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. That's a website we created and dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And for any new folks, or folks that just kind of listen out of habit and wonder why the hell we do this every week, what we do is we take a look at various articles, maybe concepts that are floating around. Every once in a while, we focus on a specific game. We like to zero in on a specific topic or core theme, and then have a little bit of a discussion on it. We, you know, tend to give it some attention for about half an hour, maybe some attention that it wouldn't normally get on a longer form news, reviews, letters to the editor type podcast. So in case any new folks are out there, that's what we do.
That's right. And what are we doing today, Scott?
We are going over to unwinnable.com, where Sam Matchkovich, I'm sorry, Sam, I undoubtedly mispronounced your name. He wrote an article called Dead Wrong, and it focused on the recent XBLA downloadable title, Deadlight, that apparently was set in Seattle. I had no idea this was set in Seattle, by the way.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, I think a lot of it takes place in, like, the underground subway.
Yeah. Well, and the problem is, according to Sam, is that while it takes place in Seattle, the environment itself is really generic, and it doesn't have much to do with Seattle because he lives there. And it even has just some things flat wrong about how Seattle is set up as a city. So we decided it would be kind of an interesting topic to think about games that try to portray either real life areas, you know, geographic areas, or, you know, very specific real life details. And, you know, what are the benefits and drawbacks of trying to do that, along with some of maybe our favorite examples or maybe infamous examples of when games try to do things like this.
I think it's interesting that Sam writes this from Seattle, but you kind of have to admit that unless you live in Seattle, you have no idea, right? You don't really know.
You're not this like, is when we start a whole trans-city beef with every other major city. George and I are, we record in the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area. So, you know, we already have, you know, that bias going for us. And, you know, the West Coast, you know, the storied West Coast rivalries, you know, us versus Portland and Seattle.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, yeah, definitely. But, you know, there's some rivalry with Los Angeles. But, right. You know, the point is, when you live in one of these major cities, these major metropolitan areas, it's hard not to feel like you're fundamentally a part of that city and that identity, right?
Right.
Like, for people who live in San Francisco, and this is the same in New York, all people do is talk about where they live in San Francisco or New York.
Yeah.
It's a frequent point of conversation. Yeah. It doesn't matter. We all live in the same city. It's no, where in the city do you live? Because the architecture, the space of the city determines so much about your day-to-day activities and apparently who you are as a person.
Right.
Now, Scott and I have never lived in San Francisco proper, where we've always been on the outskirts. Kind of
you know what? East Bay for life. Born and raised, man. Like
I love the East Bay. Unfortunately, I don't think I've seen a game set in Oakland yet.
Just wait.
But, you know, I think anybody who's played a game that is set in New York or set in Paris or Vancouver, if such things exist,
right,
probably
right.
Know what it's like to see your own city reimagined in a game space or even in a movie space or a TV space and think, oh gosh, they totally messed that up.
Right. Well, I mean, just to go into some of the things that he talks about in the article, Sam mentions something that was really interesting, actually, that I had no idea even existed. Apparently, no billboards in Seattle.
Which is really cool. I like that.
I've been to Seattle, and I was trying to think back. And I'll take his word for it, but it's such a strange thing because billboards are ubiquitous, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I love Seattle, so maybe there's this implicit recognition that it's somehow like a less ad intrusive space.
Right. Well, and the problem was, in Deadlight, there are billboards.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of what sets him off, what leads him into this. Little details just don't add up. There's thunder and lightning frequently in the game, which happens, maybe once a year. And we can sympathize with that in the Bay Area. Like, we hear one clap of thunder and we're like, we're ready for the rapture, right?
Yeah.
So it's like the type of extreme weather that never really happens. There was another funny thing that he mentioned about the way that the monorail was set up was completely off grid of where it actually is in the city.
Mm-hmm.
So some of it is just flat out, missing the point of what actually goes on in the city. And some of it is trying to get the spirit, but it having just kind of a little bit, just it being a little bit askew to someone who's an actual native.
Right. And, I have to admit, this is a pretty nitpicky argument.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because you're just saying, oh, this one aspect that is not central to the game itself gets under my skin because you're so familiar. But I think that he makes a good point that, how much research and time does it actually take?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to have the city be a part of the game in a living and breathing way, right? If you want to make the environment and the aesthetics ring true, then you owe it to the game to put in some research. And I don't think it would be very hard to look at pictures of Seattle and realize, oh, hey, there's no billboards here. Right. Let's not put billboards in the game.
Right.
Right? So, there, to some extent, even though it is nitpicky, I think he's right that this is something that is irksome for a reason, right? There, mm-hmm. there are always little things that might rub you the wrong way. And mm-hmm. it's important to recognize why they rub you the wrong way and how they rub you the wrong way so that we don't do that. Because I don't think it's really that hard not to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the attention to detail is something that it might speak of larger things. Like, one of the focuses of the article is the fact that the game's developer is from Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of hilarious that Microsoft, which basically owns the city of Seattle, didn't find a local publisher to do something like this, yeah. which suggests to me that there are like large economic factors at work here. I'm sure there is a very good reason, a good monetary reason that they hired on a developer from out of the States to do this.
Well, and also, to add to that, I think it's telling that they didn't just have the Spanish developers create the game set in a city in Spain. This could have just as easily been set in Barcelona or Madrid. Both are very vibrant cities, recognizable cities, mm-hmm. given a lot of the people who are playing the game aren't familiar with that. But I like to think that the experience and familiarity with the city in which you're setting the game in will come through in the aesthetics and the feel of the environment.
But, the cynical way to look at that is, and, this is just essentially a hypothetical, but if you are marketing a game in the States or the North American region specifically, you want something to hook that audience in. And mm-hmm. if you say, oh, this is a post-apocalyptic Seattle, to us Americans, that might be a little bit more sympathetic than a post-apocalyptic city in Spain somewhere.
Yeah, and because
that's
we
not
just
to
lack
say that what
we just lack a general empathy. What are you trying to say?
I mean,
we just don't, no one cares about Spain.
No, the point is, imagined communities are a real thing.
Yes,
and
insofar as imagined things are real, but yes,
it is as much real as an imagined thing can be, and
pretty fucking real. In other words,
yeah, it's like, and this isn't to say that the developer didn't always intend for it to be in Seattle. That could very well be the case. I don't know. But as if I were a marketing/publisher type, I could see the argument to say, like, hey, say this is set in a Pacific Northwest city because we have a huge population there. A lot of people are playing games there, and the North American audience will, having a domestic city to them will resonate.
But again, hypothetical situation, but I might argue that that is a short-term goal.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost is a sort of long-term success, Like, it's easy to grab people and hook them in with this idea that Seattle, the city you know and love, even though most of you probably haven't been there, is under threat. Sure.
<Yes. laughs>
But when you play the actual game and you're like, wait a second, this doesn't really feel like Seattle at all, and it doesn't feel lived in and experienced, versus, say, oh, hey, maybe you don't know Barcelona, but it's under threat right now. Yeah. And then you play the game and you go, oh, wow, this is made by a group of people who are familiar with the city. They love the city. And it feels like it really is under threat because it has a homey feeler. You know, I'm imagining this perfect game. I haven't even played Deadlight. But, you know, I'm imagining in the ideal situation, you would have people create a game and in which the city or the environment is a place that they feel familiar with or comfortable with, even if it's fantastic, even if it's a city they don't live in, you know, there should be a level of familiarity there. It's easier, of course, if the development studio is in that very city.
Did a game like, I don't know, let's say like the Assassin's Creed games or something, do you feel at home? You know, it's like, oh no, my Renaissance era, Venice is under attack by,
well, you know, I've been to Venice. I've been to a lot of the cities depicted in the Assassin's Creed games. And yeah, to some extent, definitely, right? Like, I had played, Assassin's Creed 2 shortly after I had gone to Italy. And, you know, there's certain scenes when you open up a new area of Rome and you get a certain view from the sort of eagle's perch.
Right.
And you see a place that you're like, wow, I was just there. And that looks pretty damn accurate, right? That's a great feeling. I'm sure for those who actually live in Rome, you know, maybe it doesn't work for them because the side streets, the little places are so much more real than, you know, my imagined place in which, you know, I guess what I'm saying is when I'm looking at my imagined version of Rome, it's smaller, right? Because all of the places that I visit, all of the places that were important to me, the sort of touristy areas or the places with notable sites are closer than they actually are. Right?
That's right.
The city of Rome is freaking huge. There's a lot of squalor. There's a lot of general city, lived-in city that doesn't appear in those games because it was cut. So the world of Rome or Venice in Assassin's Creed is much closer to a foreigner's imagination of that city after being there than it is to the actual version of that city. That being said, I think there's a spirit there that they did a really good job of capturing because they were familiar, because they went and did their research.
So is it like the question of, you know, how many, like, you need touchstones, right? Like, how many touchstones do you need in order to fill in the gaps that will inevitably be left because of, you know, development realities? You know, you can't model every single street, so what do you need? Do you need, like, a space needle? Or, like, for San Francisco, do you need a Coit Tower or something like that? Or a Golden Gate? Like, how, like, do you need to have
a need a Golden Gate, for sure.
I mean, but what if you, I guess that's a weirder argument. But so, like, you need a certain number of, like, recognizable, like, identifiable things, right?
Well, I mean, I think it, you know, I think it goes the other way, actually. I think it's more of how many things are there or not there when they should be, right? So you could set a game in San Francisco and never go to the Golden Gate Bridge, and it's not going to be an issue. You might still capture the feeling of San Francisco because San Francisco is not just the bridge, right?
Right.
But if you set a game in San Francisco and they're driving along the coast and there's no bridge, that's when it's like, okay, something is fundamentally wrong here, you know? Or you know, maybe a better example would be Mirror's Edge, right? I really like Mirror's Edge. Well, with some reservations, you really like Mirror's Edge. I have a
complicated relationship with Mirror's Edge.
I do. I have a complicated relationship with Mirror's Edge. The game is aesthetically sparse, right? And there are a few times when you can look down on the streets or you go into the streets and there's a particular scene when Faith enters a mall-like area, right? That city feels so empty and sterile in a way that is completely unrealistic to any city I've ever been in.
Right.
Right. That's really jarring to me.
And but do you think that's the point of the game, though? Because, like, the point of the game was that the police, like, you know, essentially beat everybody off of the streets, right?
But,
like,
I mean, in that case, you have to buy into the justification, right?
Right.
You could beat people, you know, out of the streets all you want, but I have a hard time believing the tyrant bureaucracy is also going to send in street cleaners and people to fucking wash all the windows and, like, polish the lampposts.
Right, right. It wouldn't, it would be a more, like, 1984 dingy rather than, I don't know, like the hyper-clean,
right,
Gattaca society or something like that.
Because I guess it's just, what I'm saying is I think it's both. I think that if you want to capture the feel of a city, there are certain things that you can draw from to make that feel more realistic. And it doesn't have to be all of the major landmarks, but certain things to make it feel like you are familiar with that space. Even something as simple as having the characters go somewhere and getting the sense that they already know their way there, right? They're not looking around. They're not, you know, the the city is built in such a way that it makes sense that these characters live there, mm-hmm. right? And then at the same time, if you have that, but you also have these other jarring things like billboards, then mm-hmm. you're just undermining whatever success you happen to have.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, things like that get faked all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we mainly talk about television and movies, but San Francisco is actually it's a pretty regular location that certain television shows are set in, mm-hmm. but it's
Full House.
It's always, well, like Full House, right? Full House wasn't filmed in San Francisco. It was filmed at a set in Hollywood. Like, and like Monk. Monk is like another big show that was set in San Francisco. That was filmed in Canada, like all other television shows.
Well, I mean, this is kind of why I hate sitcoms, right? They Full House is set in San Francisco. Mm. They never leave the house.
Well, that's because it's the Full House. You know, you got a lot of... You got Uncle Jesse there. You got...
There's always something going on in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well... My point being is that, you know, sitcoms are super jarring to me because it's clear that they're not in the city in which they say they are.
Mm.
Something like Curb Your Enthusiasm. That clearly takes place in New York because he's walking around New York.
No, it takes place in L.A.
Or L.A., yeah. I'm sorry, I was thinking of Louis, actually, right? Louis
said New York. Yeah, Louis is the same thing. Like, it's very, like, New York is like another character in that show.
Yeah, exactly. And it's going to feel weird to me. It's almost like... If the city's another character, but they don't get a chance to speak.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, that's... I think that is the difference between choosing a real-life location that will be okay to the vast majority of the people mm-hmm. and just writing off the folks that are going to see the little problems with it.
Yeah.
I mean, because in order to really flesh out an environment to make it a character like we were just talking about, you need to do something... you know, extreme in some way. Like, it either needs to be, you know, like in Curb Your Enthusiasm, he needs to be, like, you know, specifically referencing the weird little streets and freeways that he goes on every day, or it has to be something so rich, like a fictional thing that is so rich, like Bioshock, you know, that you have to spend a huge amount of time developing the character of the setting.
Right.
If you just call, you know, if calling it a specific city or alluding to it, I guess, is, you know, it's a shortcut, but it's an understandable one, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it happens in Grand Theft Auto all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, GTA 4 is New York. I don't know. I don't have a huge amount of experience with New York, but I mean, there are like very specific, like the way that city is laid out, like the bridges and how the different boroughs connect to each other.
I mean, this is why I'm really excited for Grand Theft Auto 5. Right?
Because they're going back to San Andreas.
Yeah, they're going back to Los Angeles. And, you know, it's not just that. It's that the studio's matured in a lot of ways, right? And they're going to be talking about, at least I hope, politics that are essentially about California. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you and I live in the Bay Area. You're familiar with the South, Southern California better than I am. Not the South. Southern California.
Might as well be the South, man.
but we're both familiar with California politics. And so I'm interested to see what they do with it, because... It's not just about familiarity with the city, but familiarity with the whole environment, the system that the game is set in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it works in this case. I'm way more likely to pay GTA 5 because if they do it right, it could be about something that I'm intimately familiar with.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that might be one of the reasons why, and, you know, in addition to all the logistical problems that come up, that many games don't want to be... you know, in a named real world location, because they have to deal with all of the baggage that comes with that.
Right.
We're going to be like, hey, you know, that's not how Five looks as you drive through the grapevine, just the same way that Sam would be like, hey, you know, that's not how the metro system works, you know?
Yeah. And then there, I think you also get people who say, well, why can't I do this? I know it's there.
Right.
You know, or why can't I, and you know, GTA makes up a bunch of cities. None of them are actually real as a sort of way to safeguard it.
Right, right. Because you know that certain things need to connect, or, you know, there are certain, you know, physical barriers to driving west or something like that.
Do you think that this comes up in any games in which it's not about the city, but there's something else that is just off? You know it's off.
I mean, I think the classic example is Heavy Rain. I don't know. There's plenty. I think I've probably even talked about this before, but like it's set in Philadelphia, which is like a really uniquely American city.
Mm. I've never been to Philadelphia. Have you been?
Yeah, it's a cool city. But
fattest city in the United States.
That's a lie. That's no. Huntington, West Virginia, sir.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's heart disease. I know there's something with the Philly cheesesteaks.
Well, other than them being delicious. There's things like that, though, like little... And, you know, this is even broader to, like, American stuff, but...
Yeah, there's no cheesesteak shops in Heavy Rain.
You know, QuickTime cheesesteak construction was something that they really missed out on. The one thing that bugged me in that game was all of the doors had handles instead of knobs on them. And that's a really European thing versus in America, unless you're in an office building, you're much more likely to see door knobs rather than handles.
Yep. Yep. I have handles in my apartment, Scott.
And your apartment was built as, you know, not like industrial, but like, you know, it is built for a specific reason to house, you know, visiting scholars and resident students, you know,
yeah,
like it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's commercial housing, whereas residential housing generally isn't like that. That's weird nitpicky thing, but there's other things. Like in the hospital setting, the electrical outlets were the wrong configuration.
Oh my God, that's so specific. I think you also mentioned the toilets had like the two flushing options.
Right, which is really rare in the States.
Yeah.
Because we hate water. And well, we just have really powerful bowel movements.
That's for GTA 5. you know, the other thing, and I mean, this isn't related really with the environment, but the scene when, sorry, that's really, I can't stop laughing, but that scene when the two characters...
When like, Jason dies, oh my God.
No, I was going to say, when, I mean, I don't know how to phrase it other than make love, but it's not love they're making. They're making something, some other hideous beast that is not love. because, you know, there's the technological limitations, right. And when you see them making out, you know something is wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And it didn't have to be that way. They could have done artful cuts, maybe turn the lights off. You know, there are things that they could have done to make it so that glaring technological flaw doesn't come through and go, okay, this is almost an uncanny valley kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and that's whether you're talking about a location like we were discussing earlier or something like you were saying, you know, behavioral or architectural or something, you know, the brave choice is always to try to portray it, right? Mm-hmm. The smart choice is perhaps to paper it over, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, it's hard to, you know, if you're in a creative situation like that, you don't want to shoot down someone as, you know, not knowing, like, the vibe of a city or, you know, the kind of weird little cultural, almost, it's hard to explain because you live in it every day, you know, these aren't, they're hard to quantify, but they're present for people.
Yeah. I mean, you know, cities are lived in spaces, right? They're imagined spaces as well. Like your vision of San Francisco is different from my vision of San Francisco, and it's going to be different than the developers. And so you've got to come with a lot of shorthand and a lot of ways in which you can make it feel real. In the case of Heavy Rain, when they're, you know, making out or whatever, that's something you can shoot down. I'm fine with that.
Well, David Cage can't shoot that down. Like he's, you know, he's so extreme about wanting to portray, like, you know, the breadth of human emotion and experience, you know, like for better or worse, like that's all, you know, he's all about that. You know, he, you know, it's a game where you like make breakfast in the morning. Like what other game does that?
You know, I think this also comes up with, and you know what, this is where I think we have to admit that this isn't just a problem in games set in cities that we're familiar with. This is a problem, I think, in most games. And that is like the positioning of certain things that are clearly utilitarian for the player's benefit versus the actual logic of where they would be, right? Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes it's hard to tell. Maybe it does make sense and I just don't get it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are layouts in Skyrim, right, where it feels a little weird that is where it's at, you know?
Right.
Like, the secret werewolf club or whatever in Skyrim is, like, weirdly close to the same location where the sort of leader of the city is, the Jarl. Which is just kind of, you know, it's kind of weird. Like, what if you're a secret werewolf club, don't you think you should maybe be in a secret space? Maybe not put werewolves on everything in your home? You know, and then in that same city and in other cities in Skyrim, the blacksmith is, like, right next to where people come into the city, right? Mm-hmm. And the shops are much farther inside, where it's like, you know, I'm not entirely sure the layout of the city makes sense.
Right, like that's not how people would group themselves given you know, the realities of where they live.
Yeah, like, you know, realistically, the blacksmiths should probably be near a water source, right? Because right. they are using a lot of water in their trade. Yeah. And the same can be said for other people, right? If you are, and this isn't just Skyrim, but other fantasy games or other lore in any games, right? If there's a miner, right? Why is the mining town so far from the dam? Mine, you know, right. That doesn't make any sense. We have cities in America that are literally built on top of the coal mines, right? Like the coal mine is like the center of town, and then it sort of spreads out. There's a logic to humans living in their environments that isn't always realized in games, because we need to make the space easy to use for players.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about Red Dead Redemption when you were talking about this, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like Red Dead Redemption does a lot of things, like it avoids a lot of the problems that we've been talking about, because A, it does the Rockstar thing of making it feel like it could possibly be a real place, but, you know, not trying to ape a real place, you know, street by street, or in its case, you know, state by state or region by region.
Uh-huh.
Well, at the same time, you know, because it's not a real place, it is then able to take those shortcuts, like shrinking things down. So like all of a sudden the desert turns into the prairie really quickly.
Right.
And it seems less jarring because you're not, one, because it's not built up, and two, because you're not in an actual, you know, you're not in a real life area. So you can, it's a little bit easier to let the conceits slide because, there's really nothing you're comparing this to, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think a perfect example in Red Dead Redemption is the topography and vegetation, right? Like mm-hmm. when the homestead where you're first at, that tends to be a little bit more vibrant than the desert, and that's at a higher elevation. It's closer to the mountains themselves, right. Which are much more densely forested and snow, right? It makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's a smaller space, but like the logic of, okay, the snow comes up here and then it melts and it trickles down, but then once it hits this river, it gets taken away into the river, and the desert on the other side is not going to get much water anymore.
Right. Or that like makes the sense. The dividing line between, you know, this is another super smart thing, like the dividing line between Mexico and the U.S. in the game is a river, just like it is in real life. And because you have to cross that river to get into Mexico, even though it's like, you know, in real game situation, it's only like a few horse lengths difference,
mm-hmm.
that mental leap that you make makes it, you know, all of the like orange rock and cactus feel a lot more at home, because you've just cleared this huge milestone in the game.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, it might not be a huge, you know, if you go down to San Diego and then drive 10 miles and you're all of a sudden you're in Mexico, guess what? The dirt's not going to look a different color. But, you know, like the idea that in Red Dead Redemption, they were able to get away with that because they crafted the narrative around that, like as a huge breaking point, and then also put a little geographic break in there as well. Like you have to cross a bridge to get to the next, what is essentially a level, you know?
Well, and as I recall, your first time into Mexico is on a raft, right? So you are physically on the river for a longer period of time. And mm-hmm. I think right there it's a really good example of creating the sort of psychological geography for you, right? Mm-hmm. In your mind, like this river is really big. It's a big divide. And so the game makes a big divide for you by sort of forcing you to slow down, forcing you to spend time on this river,
right?
And take a break from the experience that you just had, right? Like you said, it is a sort of large and remarkable moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really good way of saying, okay, well, we do have this technological limitation, but we're still going to try to map the experience to what it might be like if you were actually there.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, even if you are, you know, in a very specific, you know, kind of in the strictest sense, even if you're like doing it wrong, like it doesn't feel that way.
Right. Exactly.
Difficult stuff. You know what else is difficult? Trying to think of games that are set in the Bay Area. I've been racking my brain this whole time.
Well, there's Driver San Francisco, which I haven't played.
I hear that it's okay, though, in terms of... That's good. I mean, I hear that they shrink down the city a little bit. I mean, San Francisco is a small city anyway, so, like...
Yeah.
Crazy Taxi, there was mm-hmm. a San Francisco level in there. You know, the thing about Crazy Taxi that always bothered me, they got the hills and everything right, and there was even some... I think they have, like, a Lombard Street section or something. And this is like a problem with like the Dreamcast as well. The Dreamcast has like those really sharp, bright angles. Everything looks, you know, real clean. Yeah. And like San Francisco's foggy like 250 days a year. So whenever I was driving around in Crazy Taxi, it was always kind of funny being in that San Francisco environment.
Well, and if I remember correctly, and this is kind of the case with all games, but the streets are really wide.
Oh, yeah. And there's no pedestrians running out in front of you when
you're doing it. Well, in GTA, maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
So, before we end, is there a city that you would like to see more games in? The Bay Area, maybe, right? I mean, the East Bay might be fun.
Yeah, you know, I think... So, I've been watching The Wire recently, mm-hmm. and I didn't really... You know, I've been to Maryland, but I've never been to Baltimore, and so it's an interesting look at, you know, a specific type of look about, you know, one section of that city. But, you know, again, that comes with, like, the assumption is whoever does something like that will either have to cheat, kind of like we discussed with Red Dead, or they'll have to, you know, just fully embrace it and, you know, really map it with the same kind of, you know, meticulousness as the Assassin's Creed team does.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, like there has to be, it's a trust issue, right? Like, I trust that this is, like, the, you know, if I trusted that Deadlight was the Seattle experience, then Sam would be like, actually, there's a lot of things that don't make this feel like Seattle, you know?
Yeah. Well, from what I hear, The Wire does a pretty good job of it. So I guess you could compare the two.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, this is like Albuquerque or something, like a quirky little town, you know, like something like the Twin Peaks of video games, which apparently Deadly Premonition is very similar.
Yeah, Deadly Premonition and Alan Wake.
Yeah, Alan Wake is a good example. I never played Alan Wake, but I've watched a fair amount of it, people playing it, and it had that kind of Northwestern like X-Files / Twin Peaks vibe to it.
Yeah, and that's much more like the area where I grew up in, right? You know, Redwood Forests and that kind of thing.
Right.
That would be interesting to play. And, you know, I think this is exactly why it's hard to judge games that are set, say, in the favelas of Brazil, in which there are a few, right? Modern Warfare has some scenes there.
Or I was just playing Papo EO that I was... Yeah. I just reviewed Papo EO, and that entire game is about kind of like a weird, like, amalgamation of various South American slum locations.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I think I would say, and I think this is true with everybody, but at some point when you're in college or in high school, you imagine playing a game in your hometown or where you're at.
Right.
That, I think that is always exciting. Like, if I could play a game on the Berkeley campus,
right?
I'm still so intimately familiar with its shape that would be a cool experience.
Well, I mean, that's why people make mods of, like, their high schools, and then they get suspended because, you know... They're making
terrorist mods simulations of their high school.
So now that we're adults and we can't get suspended, we just start doing that.
Yeah, totally.
All right, I think we'll wrap it up there. For anyone that wants to write in with comments, questions, suggestions, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And if you're from Seattle and you think Deadlight did it right, let us know. In the comments section to this post, we update the website Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings. ExperiencePoints.net is the site. We also write over at PopManners.com, and leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us spread the word, the good word.
The good word of ExperiencePoints.net. All right, until next time, everyone, thanks so much for listening. Really appreciate it. Take it easy.
Bye-bye. Au revoir. Every time.